Hello and welcome to episode 3 of Crosshairs Radio. Today we talk to Georgia Gold and Ryan Trebone about their racing careers, the recent Cross Vegas World Cup cyclocross race, and a whole lot more. Georgia Gold is a professional mountain biker and cyclocross racer for the Luna Pro Team. She has many victories to her name, including 4 U.S. national championships in cross-country mountain biking and 1 in short track. She also won a 2012 Olympic medal in cross-country. Georgia had a great race at Cross Vegas, finishing just off the podium in 4th place. After we talk to Georgia, we catch up with Ryan Trebone, who races cyclocross for the Cannondale Cyclocross World Team. He holds 2 national championship titles in cyclocross and 1 in cross-country mountain bike. Ryan is coming into the 2015-2016 season feeling much stronger after dealing with a serious injury that came at the beginning of last cyclocross season. Had a great result at Cross Vegas, finishing in 12th place. I want to thank everyone for tuning in. If you have any feedback, please send your questions and comments to feedback@cxhairs.com. That's C-X-H-A-I-R-S. Or hit us up on Twitter or Instagram at cxhairs. Also, if you have a few minutes, check out our cyclocross skills book, Skills, Drills, and Bellyaches, at cyclocrossbook.com. All right, let's talk to Georgia. Coming into Cross Vegas, which was last Wednesday night, first World Cup on North American soil. Let's just start from there. What does that mean? What does that mean for, you know, cyclocross in the U.S.?
Well, I think it's a really fantastic move forward for the sport, you know, globally, just to have the first World Cup that's outside of Europe. Really shows that cyclocross is growing not just in Europe but in the U.S. and in other places as well. And so I think it's really a great thing for the sport, and to have it be in the U.S. As an American rider was really special, and to be able to be one of the athletes selected to race there was a pretty special experience.
You know, when I was getting ready to talk to you, I went back and looked at your website, and the last post you have up there is from the end of 2014, and you know, you were positive, yet you didn't feel like you had a great year in 2014, didn't feel like you had a great year in 2013, and it wasn't a happy story. And at some point you felt like you didn't want to race anymore, and then turned it around and went out there and raced. Was this race any sort of redemption? Did you feel like, okay, now I'm back?
After 2012, I've had some sort of rough spots, and this season has been better. I mean, I've still struggled a bit at the World Cups, which was frustrating because my training has been going really well for a couple years now, and it's just been really hard to kind of get back to the front of the race at the mountain bike World Cup level. And I had a couple, you know, I had decent races. I just got back from Europe a couple of weeks ago, and I didn't have a great World Championships race. So came home from Europe, I had about 5 days at home, and then went to Vegas sort of like, we'll see how it goes. And it was really nice to have it turn out well, because the first part of the race I didn't really feel that good, and you know, I was kind of feeling kind of burned out and like, oh, I just want to take a break, and it's been a long season. You know, I'm going through this all in my head during the race. And then it was funny because people sort of started, you know, fading a little bit, some of the people I was riding with, and I thought, you know, maybe I am okay actually out here. And it kind of turned around for me a little bit towards the end of the race there. So I was sort of pleasantly surprised to find myself sprinting for the podium spot.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it looked like you definitely were back in that pack. I think you were 15th after the first lap, and then, you know, still with 2 to go, still in 10th place. And then you put in this huge effort to catch that front group and Katie Compton on your wheel, and the two of you tried to bridge over, and you were the one that was able to make it. At that point, after exerting all that energy and catching that group, what's your mindset like, and obviously you're exhausted there. How do you sort of stay in it and say, all right, now I have to keep with this group?
Okay, I'm going to be totally honest. The front group slowed down a lot, so it made me look really fast. I think I was riding the same speed, but because they were kind of messing around and no one wanted to pull, and it was like just a perfect thing that made me look, oh, Georgia's a beast. She's totally closing it down. But really, they were just kind of sitting up. But yeah, I did, once I saw I was closing the gap a little bit, I did put in a little bit of an effort, and I knew, you know, as soon as I get there, that's the moment to go. Like, that's when someone in the group is going to attack. So I thought, you know, the crowd was really supportive and super fantastic, kind of pushing me to dig a little bit deeper. And so I figured, like, worst case scenario, I get dropped again from that group. But at least I made it exciting, right, for people watching, you know, and kind of got up there a little bit. And so then Katarina attacked, and then I did get dropped again from that group, but then it came together again. So yeah, I mean, it was kind of interesting how it worked out there with the wind and people either just letting the attacks go or deciding to save it for the end. You know, that's what's fun about cross, is it's that mix of technical and tactical and just brute force.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first, I don't think you give yourself enough credit, because it, at least on, you know, I was there live, and then I, you know, came back and just actually ended up watching it today, and on TV it looked great. And when you get there,
nice.
You know, Pendrell looks back and she's like, oh, hey, Georgia, what are you doing here? And you're absolutely right. I don't even know if Katarina just sort of felt it slowing down too much or saw you coming across, but like, it's as soon as you got onto the back of that group, she was gone. And that was her decisive move. And then it seemed more of a tactical game between, well, the riders that were left. You know, Lechner finally was able to pull away at all. But the one move that I want to ask you about, if you remember, there was one time up the, I think it was the three stairs that Pendrell and Kant both rode. You dismounted and ran and took this inside line and were able to sort of make Sonic Kant check up. Is that just pure instinct, or was that something that you earlier sort of saw that line and kept it in your back pocket and were like, this is where I can go and, you know, take advantage of this section?
Yeah, I mean, I noticed that those guys were riding all the things and or all the little sandy steps. And for me, I mean, I could ride it, but it definitely was not faster for me. And I knew that if I ran and ran on the inside, I would force them to have to take the outside line, which is a little bit longer. And then, you know, it puts them, they sort of have to just not, you know, they have to deal with me in their way. So yeah, that was definitely a calculated move. Although then I was in front and I'm going, okay, now it's the last lap and now I'm pulling them around. Maybe that wasn't such a good move once I got in front. So there was another little uphill section where I kind of let Sana go around and let those guys go in front sort of the second half of that lap while I tried to decide, like, okay, can I muster up enough to stick with these guys and hopefully, you know, go for the last podium spot.
Yeah, so, you know, cyclocross not really known as a team sport, and it ends up that you all have, Luna has three people in that last group, that of the top five. Does that really even mean anything at that point, or is just Katarina that strong that she's going to dictate what she's going to do? Do the other two of you work it all together, or is it just every woman for herself at that point?
Well, I mean, I think it's sort of like mountain bike race, or if you're you know, having teammates that are strong, if you're all riding in the same group, you definitely have an advantage there to be able to get rid of whoever else is not in the group to sort of force them to respond to attacks or to chase down your teammate. But then, you know, once we don't have a plan ahead of time, okay, Katarina's going to go and then we're going to, you know, there's nothing like that. It's because you never know until you're in the race, like who's feeling good and who's not and whatever else happens in there. But, you know, the idea is sort of to get, you know, use your teammates and use your advantage, numbers advantage to get rid of all the other racers. And then, you know, once it's just a team, it's sort of everyone for themselves.
Looking at the makeup of that final group, I would say one out of the five would call themselves first a cyclocross racer, and the rest of you all, you know, I'm guessing would consider yourselves professional mountain bikers first and then professional cyclocross racers second. Is that the result of the, you know, just coming off of the cross country season and the world champions just a couple weeks ago, or is there something else going on? Because you don't see the same makeup in the men's field. You know, is that just, it seems like this is something unique to women's racing, that there's that crossover from the mountain bike world to cyclocross.
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, just women's cyclocross is definitely a newer sport. You know, I think 2000 maybe was the first year they even had a women's race at the World Championships. And so you don't really have that same sort of history of specialization and also the same money. You know, cyclocross is a pretty unequal when it comes down to the prize money and, you know, especially in Europe where it's all, that's, you know, where all the biggest races are and the big, most sponsorship dollars and the sort of all the hype and hubbub and everything. You know, it's definitely much more male centered. So, I think that means that people then specialize because they're like, hey, I can, you know, I mean, if those top cross guys weren't making thousands and thousands of euros just in start money at those races, they'd be racing road or they'd be racing mountain bike too. But they have that, the luxury of not having to do that. So, I think it's great that you're starting to see more specialists in for women's cross, and that shows that things are starting to change, but there's still a lot of work to do there.
Right. Yeah. And that sort of brings up something that I wanted to talk about. So, you know, you're looking at roughly 8 years since what became known as the gold formula. So you were one of the first outspoken athletes about getting equality in prize money since 2007, you know, when you first spoke out about this. What do you think, where are we? What's the progress and what else needs to be done?
Well, when I first noticed, and it was literally just like standing around after the podium and, the, you know, whoever was the guy that won, hey, yeah, nice check today, huh? And I'm like, what do you mean? You know, $2,500. Like, wait, what? You got what? I got $250. You got $2,500? And he's like, you got $250? We were both like, wait, what? and I think a lot of people didn't even know that there was such a discrepancy there, that it was literally 10 times as much that the guys were making at a C1 category race as the women. And so really when I started my petition, I think it just sort of brought that out into the open, and it was a really great response that I got from that. Not from the highest level, not from the UCI, but a lot of race promoters in the U.S. the following year stepped up and just voluntarily made their prize purses equal. The USGP Cyclocross, which was, you know, the preeminent American cyclocross series, they stepped up immediately and did that, and kept doing that until, you know, for all the seasons that there was a USGP. And then just at this point, 2015, more races in the U.S. offer equal prize money than don't, which is awesome. You know, there's still not that mandate from the UCI. I think there's been some, it's gotten better, you know, the discrepancy isn't quite as big, but it's still big. And I think last year was the first year that there was a cyclocross race in Europe with equal prize money, the UCI cyclocross race in Europe. So, I mean, that right there shows you, okay, so in 2008, it started in the U.S., and 2014 was the first one in Europe. So there's still sort of a lag time there. But I think the U.S. is, and the U.S. race promoters and fans and have really done a great job of, like, hey, you know, the women's racing's exciting. We have world-class women's racing in the U.S., and we value that. We want to see that. This is the right thing to do. And so it's exchanging. It's just going to take a little bit more time.
Yeah, and I don't think it can be overlooked that the reason there was a race, you know, the Copenberg Cross in Europe and Belgium that had equal prize money was the result of the work of a club, or actually a shop, you know, from your hometown in Baltimore in the U.S.
Exactly,
that made it possible. So even there, you know, it's still the U.S.
Right, even there, and that just shows you, it's like it had to be someone from outside, that, you know, an American guy saying, here, I'll donate. I mean, they couldn't find a sponsor in Europe that would step up for that. So it's really a little bit slower, well, a lot slower over there. But I think you're also seeing riders like Helen Wyman and Caroline Mani and a lot of European riders that have come over to the U.S., women, and have said, like, wow, I mean, it's really cool to race where our race is something that people look forward to. It's not just an afterthought or like, oh, who cares about the women's race, or the women's parking is 5 miles away, but, you know, where you're kind of treated as second class citizens. It's really cool and really, really fun to race in front of people who value your racing and you're doing your job.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that what is also frustrating is that, especially in the last couple years, and I'd say definitely last season, if you were watching World Cup races, but also the other Belgian races, the ones that happen at the same time as the Super Prestige or the B-Post Trophy races, the women's races were 100 times more compelling. They were more exciting. And I think that part of the problem is that people don't have exposure to it. They're not getting TV time, therefore they're not going to get sponsorship money. So I understand you can't, it's not a charity, you just can't give away money. But if it has the exposure and people can say, look, this is a legitimate, exciting sport, and this is a field, unlike, you know, Wout van Aert and Matthew Vanderpoel, who are just going off the front and racing against each other, you have a group of women who you don't know who's going to win from week to week.
It's really exciting. There's so many contenders in the women's field, it's not just, like you said, it's not just two people going for it. I think it's changing, and I think people are seeing that, and it really takes a little bit of time for people to get to know the personalities, you know, and to get to know the favorites. And who's your favorite? You like Katarina Nash? Oh, you like Marianne Vos? You know what I mean? Whoever, it takes a little while before people, you know, they have to see some races. They have to hear the story before they want to watch it, you know? And I think there was a little bit of pushback with, you know, up until a couple years ago, there was a rule that if you were putting on a category one cyclocross race, you had to have a women's race too, because a lot of the races in Europe, they would just have a men's race.
Right.
And so there was a lot of pushback from the European promoters, like, well, we don't want to have a women's race. Well, now you have to. And so they were like, well, fine. Well, we're going to put it at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And so then you see pictures from the race, there's no one there. There's like, you know, and you have Marianne, and, you know, you have these top world-class riders riding around, and it looks like, oh, well, no one even went to watch that race. And you're like, oh, was that 8 o'clock in the morning? You know? And so, But I think now that it's becoming sort of, everyone's getting used to it, it's like, yeah, you got to have the women's race and the men's race. And, you know, and I think a lot of spectators and fans are appreciating that excitement in the women's racing more. But it just takes, it takes time. You know, there's a lot of, I don't know, just the history of men's racing is so much deeper and longer, you know, that it's, it just takes a little bit of time, I think, before people really see that, you know. But I think you watch a few races and you're like, oh, this is more exciting. And it's the same at the mountain bike World Cups too.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, the men's racing, it's like, oh, wow, what a surprise. Julian Aslan and Nino Scherter. And yeah, I mean, those guys are impressive. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying this is taking anything away from, they're both amazing athletes. And but it, the racing is boring. It's just those two guys. Whereas the women's racing, I mean, there's, out of the top 20, everyone's on the World Cup podium.
Right.
You know? And so it can, and everyone, the racing just is really exciting. There's always mix-ups and change-ups. And so I think a lot of people have realized that too. They're like, well, the women's racing is way more exciting because there's just so many more contenders.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's not, I'm not trying to say, you know, women's racing is inherently more exciting or not. I think it can be just as exciting or just boring as men's racing. It has nothing to do with the gender.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's, oh, no, absolutely.
There's years where there's one dominant person, or there's years where it just sort of changes. But and I don't think there's anything like inherently more or less exciting about watching women's racing. I think that it, you know, it's great to have another elite race for people to watch.
Yeah, and that's the whole point. It's just making sure that it's giving that equal exposure, so, you know, it can share in the sponsorship and money and all that kind of stuff. I wanted to ask you, so you followed up Cross Vegas with racing at Reno. Just one, how did that race go? And two, also, this is the first time, you know, anybody's getting a look at what is going to be the U.S. national course in 2018. So, you know, what's it looking like? How's it shaping up?
Well, my former teammate Teal Stetson Lee lives here in Reno, and she was sort of the driving force behind Cross Reno, and she really did a great job, especially for a first year event. I mean, it was super professional. The course was really, really well thought out and had a lot of different elements. And it was really a fun course to race on. The race was, you know, it was cool. It was me and Magali and Katarina riding together at the front for the beginning there. And then Katarina kind of went, and I was sort of kind of kept it there for a little bit. And then it just, the elastic snapped, and I sort of just rode around by myself a little bit, and Magali rode around by herself. And wasn't the most exciting race, I guess, but it was just really important for us to all be there and support Teal and just really be, you know, check out the course for nationals in a couple of years, but really more than that, just be part of supporting that new event. And she really did a great job, I think, sort of all around, from all the elite riders, but also all the amateurs that I talked to really enjoyed the race, and they had, you know, great food and they had music, and it was a really fun atmosphere out there.
Yeah, just from the pictures that I saw, it looked like a real professional setup, from just the festival atmosphere to even the stage that, you know, you were all on, and it looked like pretty decent prize money as well. One question I have is, the there was all this talk about like sections having an A and B line. Did that happen, and was that, you know, I don't know, some people weren't in favor of that or didn't know, were skeptical, I guess, and how did that play out?
Yeah, it did, actually. They had a section where there was barriers that had straw, like bedding, straw in between, and then bales of straw on the sides with 2x6s with like little 2x6 ramps, so you could like ride a 2x6 or run the barriers. And so that was sort of like A line, B line. And yeah, I mean, it was, you know, Katarina was riding it, I was running it. It was you know, it added an interesting thing. People could sit there and like, ride it! Ah! I could let them down every lap. but yeah, it was cool. They did a good job. That was really the only section that had options, I think, that I can think of.
So cyclocross, cyclocross purists, or those who are have a mistaken view of what that purity may be, should just get over it, and it's going to be a fun section.
Yeah, I mean, what, like, is that really such a, I don't know.
I don't know. I think people are commenting on stuff they don't really, without having ever having seen it, and just having an A and B line in a cyclocross race seemed like a novelty for some folks. I honestly didn't know one way or the other. That's why I wanted to ask.
Right. Yeah, yeah. No, I think, I don't know. I think as long as it's not something dangerous or that's fine. You know, as long as it's not something where like, oh, people are going to really ruin their bikes or just, you know, things or break themselves.
Right.
I think there's not really, if it's something that sort of makes it more entertaining. And I mean, why not? Why not have more things that make people want to come watch a bike race rather than less things that make people want to come watch a bike race? Honestly, it wasn't that big of a, I mean, people will always bitch about whatever they don't like about a course. But I think in general, like, could there have been little tweaks here or there on the course to make it better? Sure. But any course has that, you know, I mean, there's, and for a first year, they did a fantastic job. I thought it was probably the most professional first time race I've ever been to. So I think it's only going to get better from there. So I think, hopefully tons more people show up next year and it really becomes a bigger event.
Awesome. Yeah, it sounds great. And yeah, and that's the thing. They have one more year to make those tweaks to what sounds like it's already a good looking course. So that should be a lot of fun in 2018.
Uh-huh.
One thing that I wanted to just touch on briefly, and it's a lot, you know, people, it may seem old hat at this point, but people keep on getting into the sport, so they may not know the history. You started the whole heckle me thing when you weren't doing great a couple years back, or didn't feel like you were going
yeah.
great. From what I could tell, you know, being at Cross Vegas, nothing but love for Georgia Gold there now. So a couple questions, you know, first off, just sort of more seriously on the heckling concept overall, I think the way you had set it up, it was something fun and it was something where you wanted it to happen. But since that time, I don't know, it seems like, do you feel like the atmosphere has changed where it's gotten a little ugly, or do you think everything is still pretty cool out there?
You know, I think, you know, when I decided to sort of take that on and embrace that, I was like, you know, all bets are off. Anything goes. I'm not going to be offended. Do your worst. And, you know, did I get some people that were out there like, you suck, blah, like, yeah, sure. But that's sort of what you have to, I mean, for me, it was worth it for all the people that, because you kind of have to, people don't know. They don't want to, like, offend you. They don't want to, is this going to go too far? Is this? And so if I just say, like, all right, anything goes, and there are people that don't feel that way. And so I thought then it would be, I could be the one that everyone could yell at or try out their best heckle or do whatever, you know? And so, yeah, there were some people that said some stuff that was not that funny or whatever, but to me, I don't care. And I had sort of the reaction. Some people were like, wow, how do you deal with that? If people are like yelling the stuff at you, I mean, aren't you, you know, doesn't it make you sad or whatever? But honestly, if people don't like me, they're not going to take the time to write some interesting heckle to yell at me. They'll just be like, screw her and not deal with me at all. So I think all the heckling stuff was out of love. And, you know, it's sort of like, you know, comedy in general.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
When people say, like, you shouldn't make jokes about that, when there's a line, it inhibits people from being creative and it inhibits people from exploring other things that could be funny. And so I think you have to just say, like, all bets are off. And then, yeah, some stuff isn't going to be funny, or some stuff is offensive to some people or whatever, but it's, you know, it's just comedy or whatever.
Yeah,
but
I think there are
some people that say, like, oh, the heckling thing is bad, and it, you know, it turns people off or whatever. And that's why I think, you know, that you got to sort of know who you're. Yeah, it isn't for everyone. And that's why I said, yes, for me, I'll be the lightning rod. Like, if everyone wants to heckle, just yell it at me, you know. And then, and if people choose to, you know, they can put that out there too. Like, yeah, sure, yell at me. But I know there are some people that don't like that. But for me, I don't think it's gotten any worse than, I do think things like last year at Vegas,
right.
I think somebody was like throwing cans of beer at racers.
And, yeah, that's,
you know, if someone like sprays a beer on me, who cares? Awesome. Ooh, nice. Cool me off. You know, but I mean, that doesn't impact the race. It's not a safety issue, but if someone like is throwing a can of beer or bottles or something like that, I mean, that's a pretty definite line. And I think we can all kind of agree on that,
right.
You know, things
right.
that are safety hazards or, you know, impacting the outcome of the race. Yeah. Let's not do that. But short of that, I mean, you know, come on. I don't know. For me, it doesn't really matter too much.
Right. So here's going to be an amazing segue. Speaking of hydration and beer, any, did you have a bottle? Did you take bikes with more bottles? How did the whole new hydration kerfuffle from the last couple of weeks come into play at Cross Vegas, or was it just a non-issue?
For me, it was a non-issue. It actually was much cooler than it's been in years past. So it wasn't really an issue for me. In Reno, it was pretty hot. But, I mean, for us, for the women, the races are pretty short. I mean, they're only 40 minutes. So, or 45 minutes. It's not that bad. And Katarina raced with a bottle, you know, a cage on her bike. And for me, I sort of feel like that's, if you, you know, if it's hot, like, put a cage on your bike and race with that.
Yep.
Just decide it's worth not shouldering your bike so that you can have water, you know,
right.
Or decide that it's worth shouldering your bike and not taking water, or put it in your pocket. I just feel like for me, it's not really an issue.
Right, right.
There's plenty of ways to sort that out. And I do think it's dangerous to have feeds in the tech zone, the pit.
Yeah.
So take a bottle on your bike.
Yep. All right. Okay. last question for you. On your Wikipedia page, your first entry for race results or overall Mid-Atlantic Cyclocross Series, so the MAC, winner in 2005. First, that's the most important result to you, right? And second, when are we going to see you back in the Mid-Atlantic, either at Charm City or DCCX?
Yeah, that was like the first time I was ever on Velo News. My husband's like, oh my gosh, you're on Velo News. After some, you know, that race in DC, what was it called?
It was Baltimore, probably. It was Charm City, would be my guess. No,
it wasn't. It was,
I'll bet it was Lake Fairfax, Capital Cross?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. That was it. It was, you know, racing there, and I had some mention on Velo News, and it was like, I made the big time.
That's amazing.
So yeah, of course, that is where it all started.
Outstanding.
And as far as back on the East Coast, you know, I think, I don't know, it's such a bummer. Those big races, Gloucester and Providence, are all happening. They happen so early in the
right.
in the cross season, and it's sort of the end of the mountain bike season. And, you know, next weekend I have a Cliff Bar event in California I have to go to. I've just sort of been traveling since I got back from Europe, and so I've got to take some time at some point, which
yeah,
is a bummer because I'd really love – those are both awesome races. So I'm not sure that I'm going to be doing – any other races on the East Coast. I'm sort of 90% on nationals. And other than that, you know, probably mountain bike race next year, Boston or Wyndham. One of those is probably the next time I'll be out east. But
great.
I miss it, you know. That yeah. There's such great racing that the local New England and Mid-Atlantic stuff is really near and dear to me. So I've been bummed to be away for so long.
Well, we miss you out here too, and hopefully we'll get a chance to see you in Asheville for nationals. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Great. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
And there you have it. What a great conversation. And it doesn't stop there. Let's jump right back in and talk now to Ryan Trebone.
All right, Ryan Trebone. Did I get that right?
Yes, you can say whatever you like.
I like that answer. And that's sort of what I want to talk about, because that, you know, just to start out, that seems to be your approach, especially when it comes to racing, is that whatever people want to think, whatever people want to do, you're fine with it and you're going to do your own thing. So, for this year, what's your own thing? What are you doing?
Well, I mean, the way I look at it is, like, no matter what you do, people are going to like you and people are going to dislike you, right?
Yeah.
So it's best just to go ahead and be yourself. And if they like you, they like you. If they don't, then, you know, I'm not going to cry about it. But, you know, for me this year, like, I'm just going to kind of take the same season as we've always had before, you know, just a lot of domestic stuff. I didn't feel spectacular going into the season. Like going into the year, I, you know, thinking about going to Europe and stuff really didn't really seem like on the radar. So, I'm just going to kind of, I think the focus for us is the domestic stuff and then, you know, worlds potentially. And so we'll go from there.
So about this time last year, you had a really bad crash, just at the beginning of cyclocross season. You know, a pretty serious injury. A year later, just put a huge wrench into your season last year. A year later, how are you feeling? You know, how are you feeling compared to before that injury happened? And are there still any effects from that?
Yeah, I feel pretty good. You know, my back and everything. I don't have, every once in a while, I kind of get sore if I do just weird shit. But overall, it's really good. It was a huge bummer last year, you know, and it's one of those things, like, sometimes you get injured and you feel like, yeah, you know, it's a month off the bike or whatever, and then you can kind of get back into it. And I thought that, you know, by November, December, I'd be able to train good and race well. And, it just never really happened. I never really felt comfortable on the bike. I never really felt powerful. I just had like lingering effects, you know, I couldn't generate the same power as I wanted. I think it was just from just a huge weakness in my back, you know, because it wasn't, you know, I wasn't able to do anything for a month, pretty much. You know, I had five like compression fractures in my thoracic spine, and I had a ton of like fractured ribs. And so I really wasn't able to move. I couldn't really do any exercise. And so I just had to sit around, and for like a month, I think you lose like all your fitness in a month,
right?
You know, like, especially when you can't even, like, I couldn't do anything, you know, just walking was uncomfortable. So, yeah, I feel a lot better than last year, for sure. You know, I wasn't super confident with my fitness going in to this season until about like the very last week of August. I started feeling good on the bike, and I kind of started responding to the training I was doing. And now I feel strong, but not super fast, right? So I think I have like a lot more strength than I have like speed. And I think that'll kind of come with a couple more races. But, you know, the bikes are great, and I feel really comfortable on the bike. And I feel like my handling, you know, I feel really good handling the bikes, and so that helps out a lot. You know, I feel relaxed on them. I don't feel like I'm, you know, off the back, kind of going through corners and stuff like that. So I think good building blocks for the season.
Yeah. So when it comes to training for you and getting into shape, you strike me as a person who, you know, do you follow a strict training plan, or you just seem like somebody who likes to ride and you like to ride hard and long, and then everything else takes care of itself? I'm sure you're doing some more, you know, specific things in there, but are you real regimented towards a training plan, or do you do a lot on feel? I mean, you've been at this a while, you know, professionally at least for what, like 13 years now. So what's your training like now to get ready for a season?
Yeah, it's funny. I've been working with the same coach pretty much since 2004. Me and Jim Lehman from CPS have been working together, and he's a great guy and become like a really good friend of mine. And I used to do really specific training like all the time with him. And as the years have gone by, it's kind of gotten less and less like this organized, like specific, you know, 20 minutes, 8 minutes, 20 minutes, you know, kind of that kind of thing. And for me now, I do like ride my bike a lot, you know, and I can kind of, I consider it my like on the fly intervals when I just kind of like feel like going hard, or feel like doing just kind of like little workouts here and there, I'll do them. But yeah, this year I haven't done a ton of like really specific training. I've just been doing a lot of riding. And I started doing some like group rides and stuff like that, and some just local training races just to kind of get the legs moving the right direction, but I definitely haven't been overly specific about what I've been doing. I've just been more trying to enjoy riding the bike and get ready for racing. And it's hard if you're, you know, it's funny. I think as you have gone through my career, my motivation for riding has changed as well as racing, you know? And so it's interesting to think back on and like think what used to motivate me and what I used to be excited about, and now what motivates me and what gets me excited is completely different, you know, and I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's just kind of the natural progression of how things go.
Yeah, you know, that was, it's funny because that was actually something I was going to ask you about. It is that you've done a lot. You're a multiple national champion in cyclocross. You have a national championship in mountain bike as well. You've raced in Europe. You've pretty much done it all. What is the motivation now? What is the motivation to get out there and continue to race at the top level of the sport?
You know, I enjoy, I mean, winning's always fun, right? Like winning's exciting. And for me, like the thing that when I look back onto like races that I really, like I thought were awesome, it's not the ones that I like won by 2 minutes and just rode away from everybody. It's like, I like the fight, right? I like racing people, and I like having really good aggressive racing where you're, you know, attacking each other and you're making passes and you're just kind of, you know, you're racing each other. That for me is exciting. Like if I think the racing is exciting to me while I'm doing it, I think it's the fans like it as well too. And that's what, you know, that's kind of what motivates me now, isn't so much like just the idea of winning. It's like battling during the races. You know, I think that's what racing is, and it's fun, you know, and I used to like just going out there and just showing like, hey man, this is what I got, and just putting it all out there and just like riding away from people. And that, you know, I think that's how I used to like to do it, but I think now I like the more tactical battle of it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and that's actually, we chatted for a second after Cross Vegas, which just happened last Wednesday, and you were a bit frustrated in that, what you're saying with being able to race people just because of the race situation. You weren't able to do that. You know, you had a good finish. You're in there in what, like 12th place? Is that correct? You tell me. You seem frustrated with the group that you're with, and that the racing sort of wasn't happening at that part of the field.
It's just sometimes you get stuck with people, and I don't know what was going on. It was just one particular guy. I think it was like Gianni Merschmitter.
Oh, Vermeersch?
I don't really know.
Yeah,
Vermeersch. There you go. And for some reason, like, he wouldn't do anything. You know, wouldn't pull through. Would just sit in second wheel. And, you know, and I was trying to ride to keep the group moving, to keep people from coming up from behind us. And, you know, two people just rode off the front of the group, and he didn't do anything. And I'd go, and he'd sit on my wheel, and I'd sit up, and he wouldn't do anything. I'm just like, dude, what are you doing? Like, I'm nobody, man. Like, you have one person on your team is up there in like fourth place. You know,
right.
Kyle's was up there, but the rest of your team is way behind us. And I'm like, why aren't you riding? You know, we got 3 laps to go, or 2.5 laps to go. And so, we call it soft cocking, and that guy was definitely soft cocking the whole time. It was pretty annoying, and I don't understand. You know, maybe he just didn't want to ride. So
maybe it was.
I was just glad that Corn Van Kessel outspurted him, so at least he got. You know, but it happens. I mean, I can't. I mean,
yeah.
Whatever. It's racing, you know, and like. That kind of racing isn't the kind of racing I like. You know, that's just like sitting on and just being a dick, right? Versus like, hey, man, let's go, let's ride aggressively and get to the finish, you know,
right.
And like race each other. So
when earlier in the race, you had, I think one of the times you're going up the stairs and you have Kevin Powell's in front of you, a guy who has a bit of a reputation for not always staying upright, and he, you know, just totally eats it on the stairs. What's going through your mind at that point, and what do you do in those situations when, you know, when you know there's a crash there, and how do you sort of refocus and get going again?
I think Kevin Powell has got really good bike handling skills. You know, it was so chaotic, and you go to these stairs, and it wasn't like you were going, you know, single file, and you could see the lines. It was pretty wide, you know, and you're kind of hopping the barriers. The stairwell steps blind, and people land, and the kind of the sand that they put behind the boards kind of kicks you left and right. And so I think he just ran into somebody and got pushed into the tape, you know. And that was not a hard part of the night. It just was a stressful part because you never really knew what was going to happen every time you went through them. You know, you just kind of hoped to get through clean and didn't get stuck behind someone. And he went down. I couldn't do anything. I just had to stand there, and then like 20 people pass us, you know, and so I went from sitting inside the top 10 to like back in like the mid-30s, and I had a two minute of just like frustration of like, shit, man, I just spent 3 or 4 laps working my ass off to get up to the front, you know, and put a lot of effort in, took a lot of risk like getting up there, and then, you know, you're instantly in the back again, and so I almost just kind of was like, well, you know, I guess this is where we're going to ride around the rest of the night. But it took me about 2 or 3 minutes. I got my shit back together and kind of focused on moving forward again. And was able to ride back up into the field. So I was glad that I pushed a little harder at the end. And I'm kind of frustrated that I didn't just immediately start doing them, because I think I could have gotten to the front faster and then maybe even finished better in the race. And so I think that's what caused my finish to be worse. It wasn't Kevin crashing in front of me. It just was me lacking the drive immediately after I got held up to just keep pushing back to the front, right?
Right. So this, even going back a week before Cross Vegas, or at least half a week, to the Het Mir race up in Portland, you and Lars Vanderhaar are really the top of the class out there. Did that do anything to sort of show you where you were fitness wise, or was that just a fun race? And how was that? It looked like it was a good time for what more or less is a local race to be able to get out there with the former World Cup winner.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it was a great time. You know, that's actually the race that I broke my back last
right,
year.
Yeah.
You know, and I crashed. And so, you know, we went out there, and it wasn't like we rode together. And, he just basically, like, rode a really fast first lap and put 20 seconds into me.
Yeah.
And then we see it that 20 to 30 second, like, gap the whole time. And so I was going pretty hard. And, you know, I wasn't preparing for the race, like, showing up. Cause, like, oh, well, I was just going to race. I get a race with him. You know, I just do my training during the week. And I went to the weekend pretty tired. And so I think, you know, he went, and I was just like, I can't tell if my legs are hurting because I'm tired or if we're going fast, you know, because I never got a ride with him. And I guess after the race, he was saying, like, oh, man, that was, like, hard, you know. I was, like, going pretty deep. I'm like, well, I'm glad you're hurting, too, because I was, like, suffering pretty good out there as well, you know. And I could never tell, you know, because it wasn't like he put 3 minutes into us and was riding flat out, you know. I think we were kind of riding the same speed, just 20 seconds apart from each other. And I'm glad to know that he was at least going hard. It gave me a little bit of confidence, at least going into Vegas, that I wasn't going to be 4 minutes or 5 minutes back, you know?
Nice. Yeah, so I think my only disappointment from that race is that there was no podium picture, because I had money on it that you were still going to be taller than him if you were on the second step.
Oh, I'm usually taller than most people, even like 6 foot tall dudes, and I'm on the second set, you know.
So, you know, being
it was fun, man. It was a cool race, and it was funny because I was talking to him beforehand, and he was asking me like, "So, do people let us pass?" And I'm like, "No, dude. I'm like, people don't let you pass. They don't know who's coming up. They, you know, most of them don't even know who you are." I said, "Just be nice, you know." I said, "We're not going to be racing each other. We're not going to be like a big pack. You know, we're going to be 5 minutes ahead of third place." I said, "Just take it easy. Let people know you're coming. It's better for them to get like a positive interaction with you instead of you get out there and being like mad and yelling at them trying to get around, you know, and then they call your sponsor or something, you know." I said, "Just have fun, take it easy, and just, it's a local race. Nobody gives a shit, you know."
Right.
You're out here, and so just, yeah.
They're all looking around wondering who the kid poser and the giant kid is.
Totally, because, I mean, there's a lot of people that know who he is. That really,
yeah.
There's also a lot of people that don't know, you know? And so, like, you're not, like, it's for fun, you know? We're not out there, like, you get $30 to win the race. And
right.
So it's not like you're racing for anything, you know? It's fun to be out there and riding around with people, you know? And I think people get a kick out of that.
So, you know, being a tall person myself, what are the challenges that you have had, you know, with height in there, and also the advantages that you see? So I sort of struggle through both and don't usually get to ask anybody this question, because most of the people I talk to are like, you know, a foot shorter than me.
I don't know, people are just like, what's it like being tall? I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't really, this is kind of, it wasn't like I was 5'5" and instantly it was 6'6", you know, like this is just kind of how I was just tall when I started riding bikes. And so, the only disadvantage that I had ever seen is like when it gets tight, you know, like the bikes are just a little bit longer and your center gravity is a little higher. And so it's harder to make these really tight corners. And I think over the years, I've just learned to adapt my lines instead of trying to ride the same lines as other people. Like I have to kind of turn in later and trying to turn across the corner more versus like just kind of being able to make the tighter turns, you know. I just have to take a little bigger line.
Yeah.
And, you know, also when you're taller, you're way more, and so it's harder to run the same really low tire pressures as people. And so, you know, I don't know. I would never say I've ever lost a race from being tall, right?
Right.
I don't think it's that big of a disadvantage, like, you know, and I definitely would rather be 6'6" than 5'5".
Yeah, me
I'll
too.
Take whatever disadvantage comes to that.
I'm with you there. So, going into the rest of the season, especially with Holy Week coming up, and as you said, you're, you know, concentrating on this domestic schedule. Jeremy Powers definitely, you know, has set himself out there as the top rider in the U.S. Is any of your motivation, is it just to win? Is it to go after the guys that, you know, you were going head to head with before, like Powers, who now, you know, have had good seasons, and to prove that you're still there? Does that mean anything?
Well, totally. I mean, everybody wants to win and be the best, right? Like, you know, Jeremy's, he's definitely put up his game a lot, and he's riding really well. And like, I can't say like, oh no, he's not doing that good, you know, or like he just won races last year because I wasn't there. Like, no, Jeremy's fast, you know, and like, but I also think that like I'm one of very few people in the U.S. or probably the only one that's not really intimidated by Jeremy, and not really like when at the races like, oh, he's gonna, you know, I'm gonna stick with Jeremy. I'm like, dude, I'm like, I can easily beat Jeremy if I have good days, you know, like even on his best day, like, I can still win, you know. And so for me, I don't go out there with the expectation of marking him only, you know, like. He's a great racer, and I actually really like racing Jeremy because we race each other really hard, but it's always really clean racing, and it's fun to race each other, you know. And like, we're good friends, and we get along, and like, we totally bust each other's balls all the time, and so it's fun racing when you're like, you know, you're not gonna go out there and some guy's gonna just chop you, and he's just doing it to be a dick, you know. Like we race so hard because it's fun, and that's like, you know, what you should be doing.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. I think you can definitely see that when you guys go head-to-head out there. So of the other racers, especially some of the younger guys coming up, who do you see as, you know, sort of being that next generation of U.S. cyclocross?
I mean, Curtis White, impressed me on Wednesday. I mean, he was 20th, you know, like he didn't have a great start position either. He was still, he's pretty good, but I mean, he's 20th place is a pretty solid result for a World Cup, you know, and he flew in the day before, had school, you know, was at school and then left early morning Thursday to go back to school. And so like, yeah, Curtis is looking really strong this year. And I think he's definitely, I think he's going to be good. And I'm looking forward to actually racing with him because I think he's going to be one of the top three or four fast dudes out there. And it's nice to have someone else on the team that's like that, you know. There's always a bunch of young guys. You know, Danny Summerhill, I wouldn't really consider Danny Summerhill young anymore, but it's good that he's got a program together, Al Racing. Logan Owens always, I think, one of the guys that's just a huge talent. And I think his focus is going to become more on the road, though, so I don't think he's going to be doing it in much cross, but I still would like to see him get out there, you know. I think we need more people racing from the mountain bike side of things to come out and do the cross racing as well. You know, it's nice having Jeff Kabosh out there. It was awesome when Todd Wells used to race, you know, but I think some of these younger mountain bike guys got to realize that, like, just doing the mountain bike racing for 6 months out of the year isn't a way to build a reputation and something to sell to sponsors, you know. They need to realize that just doing a couple of World Cups and the U.S. Cup races isn't enough, you know. They got to come out and do the cross races, and that's when you kind of build a following, and that's when you can sell to sponsors, you know. I think that's why people like myself and Jeff and Todd, you know, because we race year-round. We go, you know, race the full Norbert series, and then we come and race the cross season, you know. And I think it's important to have that crossover. You know, you don't have to race Tell World, but if you come out and race through December, like, it's good, and it's good for you, it's good for the sponsors, and there's no reason that people need to take 6 months off a year on the bike, off from racing, you know?
Yeah, and is that the way to do it? If you don't want to go to Europe and do those things, is that sort of the plan? If you want to be a domestic bike racer, not on the road in the U.S., and have that as your career, you know, that's the way, right? I mean, that's the only way you really can do it, is to race both mountain and also cross.
Well, I think if you want, I mean, I don't understand the idea that you need to have from October 1st to March 1st off from racing. That's 6 months, man. That's like, you know, there's a lot going on there, you know, and there's a lot, that's a lot of time sponsors are paying you to do nothing, you know? And I think the road guys have a little bit busier of a schedule. I mean, I understand for them it's really hard because they do probably, you know, a guy like Chris Jones does 100 days of racing a year or something, you know? And so it's, sometimes it's, you know, when they start racing in February, it's different than when you're racing at the end of March. You know, if you want 10 mountain bike races a year, I don't think that's enough to quantify getting paid racing full time. You know, I would love to see those guys out more because it builds your fan base, and, you know, it builds the sponsors, and they all are interested in, you know, seeing you out there all the time. And I think programs like Raleigh Clement are doing a really good job because, well, they have mountain bike specific people, but they're out there at the mountain bike races, you know, and then they're out there at the cross races doing well. And so I think we need more programs like that, that have a crossover. So we're building, you know, you're not just, you know, I don't do that much racing anymore on the mountain bike. I'm also old, so I get a pass from that. So.
So yeah. So what are you, 34 now? Old?
Yeah, 34.
Yeah. So,
Well, I've been riding racing bikes for 20 years now.
Yeah.
I don't feel old. I just, you know, I've been riding long enough. I feel good about what I've done and what I haven't done. So, yeah, but I mean, I love riding bikes though, man. It's fun riding bikes, you know, but like, I think the one problem, I think if you've been a professional and then you aren't as competitive anymore, you don't get the same enjoyment of it because, you know, riding's always going to be fun, but like racing, when you know what 100% is and then you're at 70%, it's not as fun because then it just sucks.
Yeah.
You know, then you're just going slower than you're used to. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's,
you know,
a,
I think I'll always ride. Yeah.
Yeah. No,
I'll
it's
always race bike, always ride bikes, but I don't know if I'll always race bikes.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like watching a guy like, you know, Sven out there getting second and seeming to be excited about it, which seems odd. It's almost like he's come to terms with, you know, that he can pick his, pick his places this year to try to get a win. But, you know, seeing that guy who seemed like, you know, invincible for so many years be happy with second was a little weird.
Well, yeah, and you mean you have to be okay with being 39 years old and people being 21 and being faster. You know, that's not like a bad thing. It's just how things are going to happen. You know, like, I think if you go, shit, man, I should still be faster than these guys, you go, well, no, because these guys are 20 years younger and they have a lot more energy left, you know, and their ability to train harder is, you know, bigger as well too. So I think Sven will still win a ton of races, you know, but he's going to win a lot of races on experience versus just outright speed, you know.
Yeah. So do you enjoy watching bike racing at all?
Totally. I like the effort, right? So for me, it's seeing the stuff that's cool and seeing people like really push hard and that, because it's awesome to see, because those guys are, when they're going for it, like, you can tell when people are going for it, and that's fucking cool to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So, you know, I just in person wanted to thank you, as I've done online, for being my favorite Twitter troll and keeping everybody out there in line. I honestly love it. So don't stop being you.
It's funny because I sent Jeremy a text the other day and I said, you know, half the stuff I say is I only say it because I know you're sitting there shaking your head when you read it. And I said that's like my motivation to do some things. You know, I just want to make him nuts. And so, like, for me, it's just fun to kind of poke at him a bit. Plus, whatever, you know, like, I don't think I say anything that's like untrue, you know. It's maybe people don't want to hear it, but I think most of the stuff I say is pretty valid, at least.
Oh, I think it is all wonderful entertainment and love that community exists out there. I wouldn't have it any other way.
Right on.
All right, Ryan.
Somebody likes it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us, and hopefully we can catch up with you soon.
No worries. Thanks a lot. Have a nice night.
There it is. Another episode of Crosshairs Radio is in the books. Thanks again for listening. And once again, you can reach us at feedback@cxhairs.com or on Twitter and Instagram at cxhairs, at CXHAIRS. Also, follow the In the Crosshairs cxhairs.com page on Facebook. Thanks a bunch, and we will catch you next week.